From Portland, Oregon, this is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rockney Roll. Coming up this episode, believe it or not, there are a lot of people in Oregon, and especially in Oregon schools, who have never met a Jew, who have never had the chance to understand Jewish culture, Jewish life, and what it means to be a Jew. Fear not, though, the work to help change that is well underway. Student to Student, a program in which groups of Jewish high school students present to their peers about their Jewish experiences, began in St. Louis and has expanded to more than 20 cities across the country, including Portland. I spoke with Ben Loria and Anouk Cohen, two of the program's Portland participants, about their experiences and why this process of sharing their Judaism is so meaningful to them. But first, Doris Horenstein, author, speaker, Jewish educator, and friend of this podcast, is releasing a new book about how we make choices. I chatted with her about why process is important in decision-making and the ways our decisions guide who we are. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland and Dignity Grows. A program of the Federation's Women's Philanthropy, Dignity Grows provides menstrual and basic hygiene supplies to those in our community who need them most through their signature supply totes, packed by volunteers at packing parties like the one coming up Sunday, May 18th at Roschnitzer Manor in Portland. Learn more about Dignity Grows and May's packing event at jewishportland.org/dignitygrows. Now, let's get started with Doris Horenstein. Doris Horenstein, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you have a new book coming out.
Yes, I do.
Briefly, tell me what's the title and what is it about?
It's called Choose to Be Your Own Champion, the six-step playbook to become your best self. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to be that?
I do. I try to be.
Yes, we all do. And sometimes we fall short. So this book is reminding you, us, all of us, the importance of the choices that we make in our lives on a daily basis, in your personal development, in your team, in your group, in your family structure, wherever.
So this, tell me the story about how this book came about.
Well, a few years back, COVID happened.
It certainly did.
And we were stuck in the homes, and I noticed the different choices that we all had to make. And some of the choices were hard to make during that time, but the seed came into my mind of how do we make choices that we are not going to regret? Choices that are going to align with our values and our mission and who we are as human beings. And sometimes, what are the choices that we make that takes us away from the path that is actually a good path? We all do that. We all sometimes fall, you know, on the side, you know, fall on our face. The question is, how long do we stay face down
on
a cement?
And how do we get up off our face?
Exactly. So that's really what was the impetus of this book. The different choices that I observe me making, other people making, and the system. And I'm all about different systems and frameworks, mm-hmm. about how do we make this choice. And for a couple of years, I was just writing down all the different choices and dissecting them. And then later, only in 2024, I decided I need to have a roadmap. And that's how it became the six-step playbook.
So why is a framework like this so important when it comes to making decisions and making smart, thoughtful decisions that, as we were talking about earlier before we started recording, you can really live with?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us make choices, different decisions that come from a saboteur reaction of things that are happening in our lives. And our brain function, as a positive intelligence expert, our brain function will go immediately into what's wrong, into the difficulty, into really abusing our own innate powers. So when we have a system, we don't work in haste. We don't react, but rather we respond in a thoughtful way. And in this book, I actually teach the readers through a complimentary book that I add with a QR code into the book, mm-hmm. that they can write down their process and have that step one by one by one into making a decision that they could live with, that they know will add to them feeling good about who they are, who they want to become, their best self. I do believe that every one of us has the ability to be a champion. And I take that Not because I was in a marathon, but because I look at the Hebrew language. And the Hebrew language, the word for a champion is aluf. Mm-hmm. Aluf takes the first word, aleph. If you change the vowels of aluf, you get aleph. Aleph, the first letter of the alphabet, is also the first letter in the word human, Adam. What does that mean? That we all are capable of being that champion within. Sometimes we don't even realize our own capabilities. And I wrote this book to highlight, to show people how they can become their own amazing Adam, their champion that is within them. I honestly believe so much in my heart that we can have that ability. So much so that the tagline on my own website, way before I wrote this book, mm-hmm. was the letter Aleph and find your champion within is writing.
So this is a concept that you've been working with for a long time. And we were talking earlier about the choices that you've made in your life that really some of this book focuses on, including when you came to the U.S., a recently off active duty IDF officer with a suitcase and $600.
Yes, exactly. And imagine that courage mm-hmm. that takes to a person at the age of 21 to do such a step. I came here not knowing anybody except Bob Horenstein, my husband, and I made that choice to make this my home. And it wasn't a choice that I made hastily. It took me years to realize and to understand, and in order to feel complete and whole, I needed to be calling this my home. And so this is one of the choosing that I describe in the book. I describe also in the book how I left my education career to do what I do now and the thought process that went into that. And I also give a lot of examples of coaching others, speaking to different companies, talking about resilience and how you can become the best that you can be if you keep on practicing one step at a time, right? Isn't that what resilience is all about?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just a framework you sat behind a desk and made up. This is from your lived experience.
Each and every story there. And some stories are heart-wrenching stories. Mm-hmm. My friends, I have a few friends that read a little bit of it, and they said to me, we did not know that about you. We did not know that that happened to you. And so I think it will be interesting for people to read that and also relate to it in so many ways. People who are striving for leadership and want to grow in leadership. People who are working in office and want to be better team players or be regarded as better team players. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you think you're a good team player, but be regarded. And for those leaders who manage teams and people who just wanted their company, you know, CEOs that wanted company to be lifted in their culture. For all these people and for your own personal development, this book was written.
Well, I was about to ask that you have this beautiful background as a Jewish educator, but this book is not just for Jewish folks. This is
no,
for everybody.
It is. It is. My first book, Moments of the Heart, mm-hmm. was written from a place of Jewish education because that is what I did at that time. And my sister was diagnosed with cancer and I thought, okay, how am I going to make her go through the day and being optimistic about the future? This book is I had, before I wrote it, I thought, who is going to be the reader and the learner in this book? And it's leaders, it's professional people in the corporate world, in the entrepreneurial world, people who strive, who have a growth mindset mm-hmm. and not a fixed mindset, people that want to learn and grow and be the best that they can humanly be for themselves and for the people around them.
Well, the framework is six steps, but I really want to focus on the first one you mentioned, clarity. Why is clarity so important in any kind of decision-making process?
Because when you only work, talk about positive intelligence, if you work only from the left side of your brain, where your saboteurs live, from the limbic system, you are going to be more on the reactive. And you are going to think that that's normal. Whenever you have a bad feeling, bad emotions, you act out of that. In the clarity step, there is clear exercises to have you stop before you react. You're going to shift your brain waves to the right side of your brain where your sage powers live, where I discuss it in the book. Mm-hmm. I talk about what are the 10 saboteurs that all humans are exposed to. We don't all have the 10 saboteurs.
Thank heavens. One or two is enough.
I think, yeah, one everyone has. It's the universal judge. Mm-hmm. And that's the how we judge other people constantly. That's the universal saboteur. And then we have accomplice saboteurs, nine others, to which most of us will have two or three of these accomplice saboteurs. And then how do you, so explaining that in the clarity section on the book, because it's like, imagine it's like the foundation. You have to understand who you are before you understand how you operate and then what do you want to operate differently. So understand that basic ground education. And that is what the clarity step is all about. And then when I lean into something else, what I call the sage powers, what are they? And so I talk about the sage powers and the idea that you have the power to decide and that you are the product of your own choosing. That's in the clarity section. Because we are. We are 100% the product of our own choosing. And I know sometimes when I speak about it on stages or in conferences, some people will say, oh, no, no, it happened to me. It happened. And I said, I did not say that what happened to you was your fault or your initiative or your doing. How you choose to react and respond, that's 100% on you. So if something happens to you and you go screaming, kicking chairs off the table, you know, whatever it is you do, that is you. The opposite is true too. If you reflect, if you think about it, if you come back to the table with calmness as much as we can, even when sometimes things hurt, and I know I'm not a saint, you know, don't think that I don't get mad because I do. The question is, how long do I want to get mad? And then how do I want to shift it? And what do I want to do to build up the person who I want to become?
Well, I definitely think the person I want to become is going to be reading this book, so I look forward to it when it comes out. Dorice Hornstein, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you for including me.
Dorice is having a launch party here in Portland for Choose to Be Your Own Champion Thursday, May 22nd at Congregation Neve Shalom. You can learn more and sign up for the event at doricehornstein.com. Next up are Portland student-to-student participants Ben Loria and Anouk Cohen. Ben Loria, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Anouk Cohen, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you here. So will you each tell me about your Jewish journey?
Hi, everyone. My name is Anouk Cohen. I'm a senior at St. Mary's Academy right now. And my Jewish journey, I would say, started with my parents and me being born. So I come from a multi-faith, multi-racial family. My mother is Chinese and white, and my father is Ashkenazi Jewish. So that definitely gave an interesting upbringing for me is, you know, I've been raised Reform Jewish my whole life. And I've also had a bit of discomforts and not issues per se, but it's definitely been a little controversial, this kind of interfaith marriage my family has had. Both my mother and father's side of the family were not particularly open to the idea of marrying outside of their religion. And my bubby, actually, when my parents said that they were going to get married, cried tears of sadness for my father going away of some way. And my mother was raised evangelical Christian, which is a very different sect, and her family was not particularly prone on the idea either. They eventually grew to it, and as, you know, me and my two siblings became raised Jewish, they grew fond of us, and it was fine. But that definitely gave me a more difficult upbringing, knowing that I wasn't fully accepted by any community that I was a part of. I had a difficult time connecting with my Asian peers because I wasn't Chinese enough, and, you know, my heritage is a little more distant and my family doesn't speak Mandarin or Cantonese. While with my Jewish side, even though I'm, you know, go to Hebrew school weekly, I'm a Madrahim now, I was still lacking that acceptance from my peers, especially growing up when I was in Hebrew school. It was kind of a time where mixed families were just beginning in the Jewish communities, even in Reform communities, and it was not fully socially acceptable to have only one Jewish parent. And I think it's even less socially acceptable to have one that is not a mother. So that's kind of where my journey started. Since I've been in Hebrew school my whole life, and I am very involved with activism in Jewish politics now. I'm particularly interested in modern Zionism and progressive Zionism and how that shows up, especially since October 7th. Family friends of mine were kidnapped and killed on October 7th, and it's been a very personal experience to go through, as I'm sure it has for most of the Jewish community across the world. And I've always been very open about my identity. I wear Judaica every day. It's never been something that I wouldn't want to do. It's definitely caused its fears of being an open Jew, having the last name Cohen, but it has never been something that I've been ashamed of. And I go to a Catholic school now, and with a highly large percent of Jewish girls who go there, and I've still never felt ashamed or that I should ever go somewhere where I felt like I needed to hide my identity. So I would say now I'm very involved in my Jewish spaces. Ben and I actually go to the same temple and we are both Madrigims together. And I think that this is something it's a part of my identity I'm very prideful of.
Similar to Anouk, my Jewish journey began with my parents. My mom was also not born Jewish, but she did love to listen to Fiddler on the Roof as a kid. So she claims
she's... Yes, I agree to that one.
But my mom and my dad is from Israel. My dad's dad's from Israel. My dad's 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 from Israel. We've been living there since the 1920s. And my mom converted. So then I was born. And I was born in LA, which is a very different sort of Jewish vibe to Portland, because, you know, LA, lots of people. So there's obviously a very strong Jewish culture there. Mm-hmm. Up here in Portland, it's different. There's not maybe as much Jews, but it's still a very strong culture. As I've said, my dad's from Israel. And so a large part of my Jewish experience and my Jewish journey has been tied to Israel and to Zionism and to figuring out what that means. Obviously, I consider myself a Zionist, but I've been sort of trying to figure out how to interact with the people who don't consider themselves Zionists. Ever since middle school, when students would refuse to listen to Israeli hip hop that I found just because they didn't like the politics. And so I've sort of been trying to figure out this journey. Similar to Anouk, also believe in strong Jewish community. Like I said, I'm a Madrich, but I work with preschoolers and kindergartners. A quick little plug for the Jenny Hebrew School. It's a great preschool. And so I work there and it's super rewarding. It's a super fascinating experience just to talk to these kids about being Jewish and what that means and preparing them for this really lifelong journey of being a Jew and of figuring out what that means. And obviously things haven't been easy since October 7th, but there's sort of been a weird kind of adaptation that's had to go on where you sort of have to adjust to a different role of being Jewish right now. Again, it's all about trying to figure out what your journey is going to be and figuring that out with a strong community behind you. But essentially, that's what leads me to today.
So we're here to talk about student to student. And I suppose for those who may not know, we should probably answer the most rudimentary of questions. What is student to student?
Student to student is essentially a program where Jewish students from different sects, conservative, orthodox, reform, come into schools and talk about just Judaism in general, as a general sort of education thing. We talk about a lot of different topics related to Judaism. We talk about different Jewish holidays. We talk about Israel. We talk about anti-Semitism. It's not a major focus, but we do talk about it. But the main goal is essentially to remove the stigma or the fear that comes from being Jewish. It's all about just trying to tell people we're Jewish and we're not monsters. We're human beings just like you. And just showing them that we're here and that there's really nothing to be scared of.
Yeah. So I'm imagining that a lot of the students you're presenting to who are 6th through 12th graders, if I recall correctly, a lot of them have never met a Jew before. That's got to be an interesting experience as a Jewish teenager.
What's really interesting about talking to these people is obviously Anouk and I have been going to Hebrew school almost our whole lives, or at least for years. And a lot of that focuses on certain things and, you know, holidays, education, reading Hebrew. And then the questions that these kids will have is somewhat interesting because it's not stuff that is a big focus in Judaism. So there's a lot of questions of what happens after you die? Do you believe in a Messiah? Or like a lot of questions that are much more focused on something that we don't necessarily focus on in Judaism. And it's really interesting just to see what questions they ask, because that's how you know what they're interested in and that they're trying to put these pieces together and figure out who you are.
What motivated each of you individually to want to participate in this?
I think for me, as someone I've been a Madrichim for the past 4 years, and I actually recently just got promoted to the lead teacher. And I think that my dedication to like my students has been such a highlight of my life. And I think seeing, especially with middle schoolers who are at the same age that we're doing, is like you see how much they're just wanting to connect with people and they're trying to understand things. And this was what was really important to me when I was deciding like what grades I wanted to teach, is I told my parents, I was like, I want to make an impact on people and I want them to remember these things and feel like they can have someone who's inspired them or who's been a good mentor and stuff like that, because those were the mentors I didn't have at their age as a young Jewish person. And I think too, as someone who also, you know, half of my family isn't Jewish, and I see, you know, being a part of these non-majority Jewish spaces most of the time, seeing how little people don't know, and just it's kind of wishing that I could share more. And like, there's been so many times where I've been at political events or something, and I'm like talking to someone's kid. Like, literally at last year's election party in May, I was talking to the district attorney's 12-year-old, and I was like, "Is your school teaching you about anything that's happening right now?" And she's like, "No." And I'm like, "Great. How do I summarize the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in 20 minutes?" And I think just it's been a real urge to educate people for me. And I think being able to go somewhere and have this opportunity to talk to an age group that I really connect with and kind of see this gap and be able to fill it. Like being involved in so many different communities in my life and seeing as an intersectional person that a lot of people don't know this part of me. And a lot of people don't know this part of Jewish people at all. And I wanted to be the person who could inspire them in that same way I felt called to with my students. So I think it was the aspect of being a teacher and feeling called to fill this gap.
Were you able to explain the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in 20 minutes?
I tried my best. I think that she got the message, but
If you can
yeah,
pull
I
that
think
off, you could
that.
have a very successful side career. Just saying.
Yeah, exactly. I could do like TED Talks, 20-minute edition, Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yeah, I think people would be interested. I would hope at least. So walk me through what the training looks like for this, and then what it looks like when you're presenting in a classroom.
For the training, kind of how it works. This is the first year with the program, so it's been kind of more experimenting a bit. So we applied last spring, heard back in the summer, and we started our training in the fall. And we did a 3-hour day where we were, you know, learning about the topics to cover, learning about how to introduce ourselves and, you know, how to talk about these things. And I think too, just knowing how to approach each age group was something that they really focused on, was like with high schoolers, you can talk more maturely, but like with middle schoolers, you might need to be more, a little more simple. And just kind of learning how to adapt to each group you're with. It was really focused on learning our demographics and stuff like that, and also learning like how we introduce ourselves. And I know something Ben and I kind of ran into is we were like, do we say that like we're only half Jewish, or do we explain like mixed up? And we're like, let's not get into that. That's too confusing. And also just learning how to like approach our identity to them. And then we have check-ins about every month and a half or so. We get to, you know, talk about all the updates and new meetings that they're having or new foundations for the program or stuff like that. And then when we sign up to present in a day that's available for a bunch of people, then we get to have meetings about that and talk about what we're going to present to, and again, cater to our demographic who we're presenting to.
So essentially, we obviously start with an overview of what Judaism is, and then we go topic by topic, and each presenter will cover one or two different topics. I specifically covered Israel and kosher or kashrut. Anouk, I can very much relate to your experience of trying to have to explain the Israel-Palestinian conflict in under 20 minutes.
Were you successful at it?
No. No, I
No.
barely got past 1948.
Don't even get me started. I always, you gotta just start from like 40s beyond with your age group. You're like, gosh, where do I even go?
Well, you can even go back to like the
I know, I'm
BC.
like, BCE, we're going that deep.
But essentially, in the classroom, we have like a template where we hit key points, but there's a heavy emphasis on relating this to personal experience. And since I'm both like my dad's from Israel, I've been going there every other year since I was 3 months old. And since I'm also kosher, I am able to really relate that to the students, and it's very interesting to see what questions they have about the day-to-day life. And we often try to incorporate questions during the presentation so that it doesn't feel too stiff or too much like we're just talking at them. We want this to be a live conversation where the students can be engaged. So essentially, each student talks about their personal experiences with Judaism. And then at the end, we just open it up for a free-for-all. Any questions about Judaism are welcome, and we always try to answer them the best we can. Oh, and I forgot, we also bring in props, lots of props, mini Torahs. Sometimes we bring in Oreos because that's a famous example of kosher foods. I brought in my dad's Hapoel Yerushalayim jersey because he's a big fan. And I told them that if they ever meet a Maccabi Tel Aviv fan, to run away. But just teaching them all about Jewish culture and the Jewish religion, and it's just such a great experience.
Well, that makes sense as there's a point of intersection that they can relate to in the form of a fierce soccer rivalry. So,
Basketball, actually.
basketball. Fair enough. So, you mentioned before, but what are some of the most interesting reactions or questions you've gotten from students, and particularly when you've spoken about your personal experiences with anti-Semitism in classrooms?
When they asked about anti-Semitism, obviously it's a sensitive subject, and we make a key point to say that like anti-Semitism didn't die with the Holocaust. It's still very much a thing. But it was interesting to see the reaction to the range of ages that this can really affect. My brother has a story that he tells where when we were first moving to Portland, he told a friend of ours that we were Jewish, and that friend at the age of whatever, third grade, the friend's first question was, "So you're rich, right?" Which is just a fascinating story for such a young kid to have that instant reaction to being told someone's Jewish. But it's also sort of permeated throughout. Like I said, with the kid who refused to listen to any Israeli music just because of politics. And just seeing their reaction, because they sort of expect it to be this high school, intellectual, or like this thing that you're gradually indoctrinated into, but it's really interesting to see their reaction to just how young people can really pick these things up.
What have each of you gotten out of this experience so far?
I think for me, it's seeing how much people want to learn. Like, I think it's been really disheartening over the last year and a half, just like seeing how resistant people are to, hearing change or not wanting to learn. And we don't reach out to these schools first. They reach out to us. And a lot of times we will, if it's like one of our schools, one of the students' schools, whatever. But most of the time, these are people who want to learn reaching out to us. And I did a couple weeks ago a similar kind of thing called the Facing History in Ourselves panel, where I talked to a bunch of teachers and educators across the country just about what, my experience with anti-Semitism and stuff like that. And it was really, heartwarming in a way that these teachers wanted to learn because they wanted to help their students. And I think it's just really inspiring to see how much people want to learn and that we feel like our, little experiences of anti-Semitism or these microaggressions that we face, we feel like they're nothing in the grand scheme of things, but they really are a lot. They mean a lot to people. And like, I just remember all the times, like when I'd share very vulnerable Jewish moments with friends and they'd be like, "I think about that so often." And I think that just to know that people want to learn and that, our stories can really change lives in a way that I don't think we always realize.
So I'm gonna branch off of what Anouk said because I think what she said was really true. But I think also the willingness to learn was really interesting to me because oftentimes there are people who just don't reach out, and there are people who I've just brought up being Jewish, and I talk to them and they completely like they get it. I've talked to these people who are maybe more pro-Palestinian, and I went into those conversations and those meetings thinking, okay, they're going to think this, we're going to think that, it's going to be a battle. But what was really interesting to me was just how willing some of these people were willing to listen to us, were willing to learn about the Israeli culture, about Jewish culture, and about just growing that conversation instead of constantly keeping to yourself. These people were very open and they placed a large emphasis on gaining this knowledge. They really wanted to learn. And that was really amazing to me.
And it seems like there's being willing to bring that knowledge in is opening up a certain vulnerability and an admittance that I don't know. I don't know about you. I don't know who you are, but I want to learn, that fosters not just a student-to-student connection, but a real human being-to-human being connection. So I'm going to turn this question around now. I'm going to ask what each of you have gotten out of this. What are you hoping that the people that you're presenting to are going to get out of this experience?
I sort of touched on this earlier, but it's really just removing that stigma. I want people to see Judaism not as this like weird, secluded group of people, but just as people. I remember I heard a friend of mine talk about when they first got to college, their roommate was from a small town, and the roommate asked them, hey, can I see your horns? And I thought that was such a fascinating story, because these people haven't talked to a Jewish person. All they've had is these rumors and these microaggressions about Jewish people, and those snowball into building us up into something that we're really not. And I just want them to see that we're humans, we're here, and we have a really interesting culture that we want to share with you. We have good food, we have good music. It's not scary. It's something that should be celebrated, or something that shouldn't be shunned from.
Mm-hmm. I think kind of to add to that too, I hope that these students, you know, see us and, you know, connect with us and see our experiences and kind of carry that same empathy to future Jewish people they know, or just people who speak down upon us and or who speak down upon Israel or whatever, the Holocaust, things like that. Because I think for me, what has been such a struggle the past year and a half has been like classmates and friends being like, oh, well, maybe it's not that bad. Or let me, if I'm like talking about my experience, they're like, let's change the topic. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? And just feeling like there's such an utter lack of empathy among students, and just wishing that, knowing that like yearning feeling of just wishing you could talk to someone and they'd be like, I hear you and I feel for you. And I think that that is the greatest showing of an ally, is like, I see you and I hear you and I feel for you, and I want to do what I can to make it better. And I just hope that these students hear us and connect with us and feel that empathy for us and continue that into these future experiences that they'll have. And, you know, if they see someone being cruel to a Jewish person, if they see, you know, their Jewish friend being like, gosh, I wish I could just talk about this, being like, okay, so do. And I think just feeling like I can help create the friends that I wish I had, and, you know, the community I wish I received after October 7th for other students and other Jewish people that they will encounter.
Yeah. When we were speaking about human connection a moment ago, clearly you guys are able to generate that in front of classrooms, but I can hear that the ideal would be that people are empowered to act on that.
I just want to say too, I know that that's a hard ask to have. Like, it's really hard to speak out. As someone who does it all the time, it's really hard. And like, I'd consider myself like my whole life being super outspoken. And like, I remember feeling embarrassed in times where I'm like, gosh, I wish I still said that. And I think it's hard to put yourself at risk like that. And we'd hope that, you know, someone could be that great ally. And also, that's kind of really hard ask to have. So I would say, too, I think the first step is like, let's hope that you can at least help us and be there for us. And then you can be the best ally you can be by learning, which is what they're doing.
I think that's worth pointing out, that public speaking is hard, and getting in front of a room of your peers who don't know anything about you and your life and your culture, that can be hard. Given that, well, first, let's commend both of you for doing so. And then, given that that is the case, is this an experience you would recommend to your peers for perhaps next year's cohort of student to student?
I would absolutely recommend this to my fellow Jewish students who just want to talk about Judaism in a space that's a little less charged, and the students who want to just show up as a Jewish student without having to explain the Israel-Palestine conflict in under 20 minutes. And I just would recommend these absolutely. I'm going to be here next year because I'm a junior, and I would absolutely recommend any Jewish student to join, to sign up. But I would also recommend any students to listen to their Jewish friends, to listen to these presentations. If we come to your school, just listen. It's very interesting, and we promise we'll try not to bore you.
I think, too, I would 100% recommend it. I wish that this program had started earlier when I was in high school, so I wouldn't only have had 1 year. But I think, too, something I've been thinking about a lot since October 7th is this quote that I can't remember who originally said it, but this woman, Eden Yagadar, who was a student at Columbia, had said this in her accounts to Congress. She had said, "We're not weak Jews with trembling knees." And I think that that is something that has just really empowered me over the past year and a half, is to think, like, I'm actually not weak. I'm not the victim anymore. And I'm trying to put an end to this narrative that we still are, and that, you know, we have a state to protect us. And that was the thing that made us a victim for so long. And I think, too, just it's such an empowering experience to get to go somewhere where you're respected. And I think that's the case in general, but you're respected as a Jew. Like, it is not often that we walk into spaces and we're like, we can talk freely. That is not an often occurrence we have. And something my dad and I have talked about a lot since October 7th is that the reason people hate Israel and Zionism is because they're uncomfortable with Jewish power. And not to be like, oh my gosh, this is a huge power play or anything, why you should join student to student. I don't think that at all, but I think that it's a really empowering experience to feel like you can share something so vulnerable and get someone to listen to you, and that they're so willing to as well. And I think that it's a first step in kind of reclaiming this sense of self and identity that we all have, is by showing up and becoming empowered and speaking out and being bold. And I think that this experience has been such a testament to that. And I applaud not only the students who work on it and all of us who work so hard, including Rachel and everyone, but also the students who are so willing to listen. Like, I don't think they realize how much they are a part of our Jewish empowerment and identity. So I would 100% recommend it to anyone who's looking to do it next year.
Well, I applaud both of you for taking that step in this way, and I thank you for your time. Ben Loria, Anouk Cohen, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. A huge thank you to Doris Hornstein and to Anouk Cohen and Ben Loria for taking the time to talk about their work. If you're going to be a junior or senior in high school next year, and Ben and Anouk's story sounds like something you want to be a part of, you can apply to join the next cohort of student to student online at jewishportland.org/student-to-student. If you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show. Click subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. Don't forget, you can get the latest news from Portland's Jewish community by subscribing to The Jewish Review for free online at jewishportland.org/jewishreview. The Jewish Review podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karone Blau-Rothstein. Assistant editor is Rachel Nelson. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rock and Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, all the best.